Hey, everybody. Welcome to the In the Truck podcast. I'm your host, as always, Dennis Brown. So we're back in the truck today. So those of you who love background noise and turn signals and that kind of thing, today's your day. We're back with all of that. And yesterday we were in my kitchen, which some people probably liked, but no more. So I work really far south from where I live. It's like 80 to 100 miles, I guess, somewhere in that neighborhood. And it's also where I live is a much higher elevation than where I work. And they did not get the snow down here that we got up there. Which is to say, I guess I could have gone to work yesterday. And we could have been in the truck yesterday. But I'm very apprehensive now. My whole life I wasn't apprehensive. But now I'm apprehensive. My boss, he comes a long way to go to work too. He goes the opposite direction. He lives in Pennsylvania. And about a week and a half ago, there was another storm. And some places are not equipped to deal with snow, just so you know. I lived in North Carolina very briefly, and they had a snowstorm while I was there. They are not prepared. Emotionally, mentally. They don't have the trucks for it. But anyway, so Pennsylvania, during this storm, the governor closed the highways. Which I used to live in Tampa, Florida, or just outside of Tampa, Florida. And we dealt with hurricanes there. No snow, thank God, because they probably can't deal with that at all. But so we hurricanes, and the governor would close the highways. That was like a common thing. We probably lived through, I mean, like directly affected by maybe three in 1 year that were pretty bad. But when they close the highways in Florida, what they actually mean is the highway is available for you to use. But if you were to get in an accident, or your vehicle become disabled, or if you were to get in a situation where you required medical attention, you're having a heart attack or something of that nature, no one was going to come help you. So that's what it meant when it closed the highway. They meant that, you know, fire trucks, police, and ambulances were not going on the highway. Tow trucks, nobody was going. So if you wanted to go use it, go right ahead. And if it went sideways, don't call anybody. Because I used to go to work during the hurricanes and use the highway, and I loved it because nobody was up there. And my wife was not a fan of me going to work during a hurricane. It was fine, except for the one with the flooding. But other than that, I think that was Jean. It was Charlie. Regardless. Listen, so Pennsylvania closed the highway, or all the highways. And apparently in Pennsylvania, that doesn't mean what it means in Florida. In Pennsylvania, it means that they literally put state troopers at the exit ramps and at the entrance to the state, at the border to New York, and they won't let anyone cross on the highway. So my boss is on the highway headed home in New York, and when they closed the border of Pennsylvania, all the cars got stuck on the highway and couldn't get off because they weren't moving. So he said at one point, they were there hours and hours and hours, and at one point, a New York state trooper drove by and got his attention and told him to shut off his car because they were going to be there so long he'd run out of gas if he didn't. That's a long time. You're going to sit still long enough to run out of gas. You're going to be there a long time. So he ended up being there, I forget what he said, 6 hours, 8 hours, something like that, before he finally got home. So now, although I never was really worried about snowstorms before, now I'm kind of nervous about it. I don't want to get stuck in my truck for 6 hours in the cold with the engine off. Not that I would die, but just rather to not do it. So yesterday when they said it was going to be a nor'easter and unpredictable snowfalls and knowing that some towns and some places can't deal with snow very well, I thought, you know what? I got that backlog of emails I need to answer. So I did that. And I recorded the podcast in my kitchen with no background noise. So maybe you're a fan of that. If you didn't hear it, you should go check it out. If you prefer the no background noise to the truck, I don't know what to tell you. In the foreseeable future, we're not changing that. Unless somebody wants to pay me. We're going to have stuff to make a living. So we're still making a living in the truck. Anyway. Today is March 14th. March 14th is the day for school protests. So what's happening today is students across America are going to walk out of school on a walkout protest. And they are going to protest school shootings, which is the silliest thing you can protest. Listen, here's how protesting works. If you are doing something that I am opposed to, I might want to protest it. I might want to get a large group of people together to show you that many people do not approve of what you are doing. There are many examples of this type of thing going on. During the Iraq War, there was war protests where people who were opposed to the war would protest in large numbers to show people who had voted for the war or authorized the war or were conducting the war that they were opposed to it. That makes sense. There was a war going on, and they were not happy. If you were theoretically, let's say, opposed to abortion, you might protest abortion clinics. Not because you're mean and heartless and you want to yell at little girls that are getting abortions, but because you are against it. And it is happening. And other people are for it. So you could show your dissatisfaction by protesting. And you're protesting a thing that's actually happening on an ongoing basis that other people are in favor of. So that's how you show your protest. It's an opposition. You're in opposition to something. I don't know. There's probably a million other things you could protest. Oh, the Occupy Wall Street folks, right? They were opposed to, I don't know what they were opposed to. They claim to be opposed to wealthy people or wealth or banks or something, but then a bunch of them come to find out a whole bunch of them were like Columbia students and they came from really wealthy families and they were just playing a game. Eventually, the leaders of Occupy Wall Street didn't like having their meetings where it was hot or around riffraff, and so they made arrangements with the Deutsche Bank on Wall Street to have their strategy meetings in the lobby of the Deutsche Bank where it was air-conditioned and the armed security guards would keep the riffraff from Occupy Wall Street out. I'm not making that up, by the way. That's a true story. I'm sure there are people who think I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. That's true. That was the one in New York. There were other ones, other places that probably were better and not quite as hypocritical. But anyway, but that makes sense, right? There's something they're protesting, even if it's unclear exactly what it is. In this particular case, the students are protesting school shootings. There is literally no one on the planet Earth who is in favor of school shootings. Nor is it like an ongoing school shooting thing. It keeps happening sort of sporadically. I would argue that even the people who are opposed or who are doing the school shootings are opposed to school shootings and realize how terrible they are, because that's why they're doing it, because it's terrible. They're not doing it because it's wonderful and they love it. They're doing it because it's awful and they realize it's awful. Excuse me. And so they're doing it. So no one's in favor of school shootings and they're going to protest school shootings. It's just silly. Yeah, kids do silly things, I guess. There's worse things they could be up to, right? But, yeah, so protesting against, yeah, it's just silly. But here's the problem with the protest. Aside from the fact that no one is on the other side of the protest, everyone is in agreement that fatherless teens and young 20-somethings with mental disorders and have been prescribed antipsychotic medication should not shoot school children. That's a universally agreed upon thing. But the funny thing about doing it with high schools is that I think if you went to a high school student at random, you pick anyone you want at random, any school you want in the country, and say, hey, we're going to have a walkout protest on March 14th where we leave school in the middle of the day. I'm willing to, I'm going to go on a limb and say 40% of, 4 out of 10 students you talk to are going to agree before they find out what the protest is about. Because they're high school kids, man. They just kind of get out of class. They want to deal with it. They want to listen to their math teacher tell them about fractions or the area of a cone and that stuff. They're not interested in that. So that's 40%. So let's say the remaining 60%, half of the people go to the protest. So now you've got 70% of high school students protesting. In reality, only 30% really care. And then of that 30%, you figure like, okay, let's say 60% of that 30% are in the banned gun camp, and then 20% don't know what to do, and 20% want to arm teachers or something, right? So that's the split. So they're having a protest where they're against something everyone's against. But even the people who care enough to protest it don't really agree on what to do about it. So you have all these different ideas of what to do. And yeah, so that's what's going on. I like complicated solutions that solve a bunch of things all at once. That's just me. So at one time, I'm trying to think of when this was. I want to say 2010. Might have been 2009. I don't remember. On the same day, in the newspaper, there was an article about how unemployment among men in the South was very high, had gotten very high during the, you know, sort of after the mortgage housing collapse thing and the stock market and all stuff. That in the South, a lot of men had been laid off from their jobs, or maybe they didn't have jobs. I don't know what the story was. And there was an article on that page as well about this shortage of agricultural pork. And so pork, meat, bacon, whatever, pork chops, the price was going to go up. And in fact, that there was some suggestion that going into the following season, they might have a real, real shortage where not only would it be more expensive, but you might not be able to get it at all. So that was interesting. And then I flipped to the next page of the newspaper, and it said that there's an article about the ongoing wild hog disaster in the Southeast, Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Georgia, Alabama, Florida. There's this problem where you've got wild hogs that grow to be enormously huge, and they travel in giant packs, and they have a sow can have, I think, 3 or 4 litters a year, 3 or 4 pigs a litter. So they just multiply exponentially, and then they eat everything in sight. So they destroy farmers' fields and knock over fences. It's a huge problem. You can't kill them fast enough. So that was all in the same newspaper. And I thought to myself, well, this is a simple solution. Men in the South have rifles. You need bacon. And you have a pig problem. Well, there you go. Just put a bounty on a pig. Problem solved. So let's say, I don't know what you say it's going to be. What do you say? $200 a pig? 1,000-pound pig? And then whoever's processing the meat is going to make a fortune. And these unemployed guys are going to make some money, and then that'll fix the problem with the shortage. Done. Easy. Of course, that's not what happened. But anyway, that would have been a good solution. I used to work with a guy who's an auto mechanic, phenomenal technician, auto technician, repair guy. His name was Jeff. And he, when the financial crisis first hit, and you had all these different problems going on at once. So you had builders out of work, and you had car manufacturers on having a hard time, and you had unemployment starting to go up really high, and the banks were in trouble and all this stuff all at the same time. So what we actually did, Bush and Obama both, was we gave trillions of dollars just to the banks. And they didn't do anything with those loans. They kept everything the same. They just took the money and stuck it on their balance sheet, moved on, and they sort of saved the banks. And then they gave a lot of money to auto manufacturers. And regular people kind of got left out in the lurch a little bit in that whole thing. So Jeff had this great idea. He said, listen, why don't we do this? Let's say there's 1 million people currently over 60 working. Okay? What we'll do is we'll give each one of them $1 million. And the conditions of the $1 million is they'd have to have a house built and buy an American-made car and retire. So most places you can have a house built, you know, buy new construction. You know what? I'm not talking about Los Angeles, New York, San Francisco. But in most places in America, you can have a nice new house built for, let's say, $200,000. And you buy a $50,000 car. And you still have $750,000 tax-free. So you're putting builders back to work. You're putting car manufacturers back to work. And the banks are getting their money because you're going to pay off your old mortgage and sell your old house. And you have to quit your job. So a million new jobs, because a million people are going to fill in. Well, it's probably not realistic. Let's say 80% of those jobs just get disappear. So 800,000 people get new jobs. Good. Perfect. Good solution. $1 trillion well spent. Of course, that's not what we did. So as far as the arming the teachers versus banning guns argument, first of all, the people who are in favor of banning guns because, and I think we discussed this on another podcast, but the people who are in favor of banning guns because of school shootings are in favor of banning guns without school shootings. Nobody's in favor of banning guns because of school shootings. There are people in this country who want to ban guns, and when there's a school shooting, or something like Vegas or whatever, that's when they start talking about, let's ban some guns. Or some baby step toward that goal. Whatever. So they're using that. And then there's people who are saying we should arm the teachers. And I'm not opposed to a teacher who has a concealed carry permit who wants to carry in the school. I have no problem with that. But as far as an active program, go out and arming teachers, seems like an insurance nightmare to me. So what if you have a program where you certify teachers to use fire to carry a firearm and the teacher shoots himself or a student by accident or whatever? Aren't you then liable, since you're the one who said they were certified to do it? I'd be real careful about that one. Because quite frankly, if one of my kids' teachers shot them, I think I would probably own the school. When that got all said and done. But why don't we do this? Listen, we've got a number, quite a few, and I don't have exact figures. We've got quite a few former combat vets who are unemployed. And unemployment among people who are that driven, sort of mission-driven people is not good, right? They've got nothing, they've got no mission, and it leads to depression, I think, and it leads to other issues. So here's what I'm thinking. Here's what we do. Anyone who's a combat vet can go back active duty for a length of time. You think a year? Maybe 2 years? All right, we'll compromise. 18 months. For 18 months, they can go back active duty. Full pay. And whatever their last rank was, full medical, full everything, right? Just like they're serving. Only their job is twofold. One is they work security at a school, elementary school, middle school, high school. I don't care how you do it. Assign them, let them pick one. Doesn't make any difference to me. And then that's, what is that, 6 hours a day? And then the rest of the other 2 to 3 hours a day, they, in the evenings, they attend a training program. And maybe some of the more intensive things they want to be trained for, they also has like Saturday training as well, or Saturday and Sunday training. I don't know how you want to do it. So they pick a career they want to do, a profession they'd like to have, a vocation, you know, whatever it is, a barber, electrician. They want to learn how to be a tree service, cut down trees. They want to be an accountant. They want, whatever it is. You pick a field and you get that training. So that's part of the deal. So on the one hand, you know, we're fixing the mission problem. So now they have a mission. They're defending the school. The second hand, we're fixing the sort of the self-esteem, mental health part, at least a little bit. Because what we're doing is we're putting them in a place where the whole bunch of school kids are going to look up to them like a hero. Who the heck doesn't feel good when you're in that situation, right? And then the third thing we're doing is we're arming them with a vocation so that they can go out and kind of get retrained. Because I don't think that there's not a lot of cause or use for most of the skills required to be a really good infantryman in the civilian world. I know there's people who've learned to apply some of those skills into other things, but it doesn't necessarily translate directly. So yeah, we teach them some skill to have a new career. They spend a year and a half guarding the schools. And who the heck is going to go attack a school that's got a guy who spent 2 tours in Iraq and a tour of Afghanistan walking around the halls armed? You're not going in there. Or you're not coming out. So that's my thought. That's what I think. I think that would solve a couple of problems. I think it would put people's minds at ease about the school shootings. I think it would deter school shooters from showing up in the first place. I think it would give these guys something valuable to do, something meaningful work, and at the same time train them to do something new. Then you don't have to arm teachers because you don't want some of these teachers carrying guns. And then you don't have to try to ban guns because that's silly and it's never going to happen anyway. So that's my solution. I'm putting that out there. We should probably come up with a name for that. The plan. what do they call it when they send them back to the war? Stopgap? Something like that? A stopgap school defense? So that's my plan. But these kids don't have a plan. They're just walking out of school and they're going to have a protest. I guess it's maybe going on right now. I'm recording this at about 3 o'clock. So probably most places, school's already over. Were they walking out at the end of the day, like a little early? Were they going out lunchtime? What were they doing? Was it different in every school? Now, the school my kids go to was pretty funny. Originally, before they planned this nationwide March 14th protest, there was a local April 20th walkout planned. Which anyone who knows anything about the marijuana, which I'm not a user, but I'm aware of it, in the periphery, would know that that would be 420 day, which is like the national pot smoking holiday. So as soon as they announced that, I laughed because I thought, well, they're not really protesting anything. They're just looking for an excuse to walk out of school and smoke pot. Which might still be true. But then they planned a bunch of, I don't know, they were inviting like speakers and organizations to come and talk to the kids and all these different things. I thought it was very strange. And the school came out in favor of it. And I thought, how can a school be in favor of a walkout? Like, they get federal funding for students. I would think insurance issues would be in effect. And then this one got announced, and I guess the kids said they were going to participate in both. They were going to have two walkouts, and the school thought it was great too. And then the school came back and said, wait a minute. We can't actually condone kids missing school, but we're very proud of them for organizing and wanting to have a voice. Yeah, that's fine. But ultimately, I can't get over the fact that they're protesting nothing. They're protesting something that nobody's in favor of. I know I keep saying that, but it's just true. It's just silliness. You protest Ebola. Everyone's against Ebola. Nobody's in favor of Ebola. So, like I said before, I think ultimately the solution is, you know, fathers marrying the mother of their children and remaining so and raising them together for the kid's whole life. That would be a good solution. But while we implement that plan, we can do the stopgap school defense program. What do you think? No? All right, so the podcast is taking off a little bit, which is exciting. So for those of you who've been around from the beginning, there actually are, if this is the first version of this podcast you've heard, there's two that predate it. So the In the Truck podcast is older than you think. There's about 40 or so episodes out there on two other podcasting services. So if you have interest in hearing the older ones, let me know. I can point you in that direction. Probably weren't as good as they are now. I think I'm getting better at it. Well, I hope I'm getting better at it. But this is episode 8 from the newest incarnation of it. So the new service is really interesting in that it links to other podcasting services. So if you listen on a different app, you wouldn't know about this podcast unless I told you about it or somebody you know told you about it. So the new service automatically posts to other podcasting services, and then some of them it lists and it didn't ever connect to. And come to find out, I actually have to go and do it. So yesterday, I got us hooked up with Stitcher. I think a lot of people use Stitcher. I think that's a really popular podcasting app. So I'm probably going to use that as the link. The Stitcher is going to be the link that I post on Twitter to listen to the podcast. And no offense to anyone else, but I think that that's a place a lot of people are at. Something a lot of people are already using. So that's really good. It's really good for the podcast. We're able to get a bigger audience that way. And I think Stitcher's one of those ones that's been around a while and does a really good job. So check that out over on Stitcher. See if you can search it. Somebody go to Stitcher and see if you can search In the Truck and see if we pop up. And then let me know. I'd appreciate it. So the other one is iTunes, the Apple podcast on iTunes. And that's probably the biggest nut. But I haven't even looked at it. I need to go look at it. I'm thinking they're probably going to make me pay money to be on there. I don't know how that works. So the Stitcher thing was great. You actually had to do an application and sort of submit it, and they take a listen and decide if the audio quality is good enough, which I got approved already. So I'm guessing the audio quality in the truck is good enough. But you have to post often enough. and you have to, there's a bunch of requirements. You got to post your, you got to post your episodes often enough. You've got to have good enough quality, a bunch of things. So it's kind of fun and exciting. It's something new. I'm excited about it. And then I wrote an article. I wrote this article. It's kind of a commentary on the fact that I believe that all people believe in God, even those who say they don't, even atheists, even evolutionary biologists who claim to be atheists, everybody. And I give some really good concrete examples in the article. So a while ago, when it first came out, I heard about this Patriot Not Partisan site. It's the idea is that we sort of cut through the tribal landscape of American political whatever, and have a real conversation, both sides, no ideology. Now that sounds pretty good. It's kind of where I'm at. I think that if we talked with each other more, we'd probably get along better. The echo chambers aren't working. And I thought, that's good. But then I found out that it's owned and ran and founded by Alyssa Milano, who's extremely partisan. So I don't really know how that all fits together. But so I sent them the article, and then I thought about it, and I thought, it's a pretty right-wing idea, right, to say, sort of mocking evolutionary biologists. I mean, in an intelligent, well-thought-out, evidence-backed manner, but nonetheless. So I thought, well, they're not going to publish it. I don't think they're really honest about... I don't think anybody's honest, you know, especially big companies, things like that. So I feel like, oh, they're just trying to smoke screen and they're just posting liberal stuff and saying that it's bipartisan or both sides, cherry-picking stuff from the right, stick in there. I've had a feeling if you wrote a pro-Trump, pro-NRA article, it wouldn't make it into Alyssa Milano's thing. I could be totally wrong. They responded to me today that they received it and they would let me know. So I'm thinking that's not going anywhere. I reached out kind of almost right after I submitted it to shop it around a little bit more. And I got to get her name. But just coincidentally, last night, an author followed me on Twitter. And she writes mysteries. So I want to check out her books. I'm going to get her name to you because she couldn't have been cooler. So I'm in the middle of thinking about where to send this article. And I get the notification. I look at it and I'm like, oh, there's an author. And I'm looking for author advice. So I asked her, like, hey, how would you do this? What would you do with it? And I really expected her to ignore me. I occasionally try to engage with people who are have a lot of followers on Twitter. She, I want to say she had 25,000 followers. And usually they don't answer. And that might be because they get a lot of silly little messages from people on Twitter. And it could be because they have notifications shut off. Who knows? They're busy. Doesn't upset me. I don't really expect a response. This lady answered me. And then I was asking follow-up questions. She spent like a half an hour trying to help me out. I thought, man, that's amazing. So when I get up there, when I get my 20,000, 25,000 followers on Twitter, and we got thousands of people listening to the podcast every week, I'm going to try to be available for people who have questions on how to do it. I don't know how to do it now. But when I get there, I'll know how I got there. So that'll be good. But I was really impressed. I'm going to get your name because everyone should read her book because she's a really cool lady. And yeah, so that was kind of fun. So that's all what's going on. I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do about the MMA podcast. And the other thing that I'm really thinking about doing with the podcast is figuring out how to have a guest. So I think logistically I figured out how to do it. So now I just need a guest that I want to talk to and I have to get them to agree. So a bunch of the times I've reached out on Twitter to people through DMs, it's to see if they want to come on the podcast and talk about something. And I'll really talk about just about anything. I'm not picky. So either I know about it and I can have an informed discussion, or I know nothing about it and I can just be very curious. So if you know somebody who wants to promote something a little bit, or even just practice doing interviews or conversations or media or something like that, let me know. And I'll probably have them on because I kind of want to practice it too. And we got a little audience going here. So that's what's going on in the world of the In the Truck podcast. Things are going pretty well. Some new developments. See where it leads. But listen, I really appreciate you tuning in today. If you got kids that went out for the protest, I got a high schooler. I don't know if she went or not. She might not have gone. I think she was thinking about it. I didn't really have an opinion for her. I don't know what the right thing to do was. You kind of don't want to not go and then be the kid who doesn't go and have the kids who do go get mad at you. Become a target for loving guns or whatever they would say. So I don't know what she was going to do. I didn't really have a good strong opinion whether she should or not. I could see both sides of that. So she might have done it. The school pretty much came out with their statement about how they're so proud of everybody for being engaged is that no one was going to be punished for it. So at that point, I really don't care. But yeah, so she might have done that, she might not have. But if your kids went out and protested or didn't, I hope that it went off safely. I hope there was no crazy. My other concern with the walkout, if you've got people who are trying to shoot school children or harm school children, because there's been a couple little ones since the one in Florida. There was one in Minnesota, maybe. I think they said it was a black Muslim kid shot 3 or 4 people. That one didn't get as much press. I've got a funny feeling the press really likes white people with AR-15s shooting people, and they're not as interested in non-white people with pistols. But anyway, so that happened. Then there was, I think, a teacher shot a kid in California. That sounds like a setup to me, plan. But anyway, so I'm thinking, you know, the schools are all secured in one way or another. I don't know how the school shooters get in the schools, because it's not that easy to do. If you have kids in school, you know, that's not that easy to get in. And I think, man, I wonder how many people show up to do something like that and can't get in and get stopped beforehand. You wouldn't really hear about that in the news. But then sending all the kids outside is just like making them sitting ducks. And if you announce all over the world, all over the country, when they're going to do it, where they're going to do it, what time, I really hope nothing happened. So I'll find out when we get done with this little ride through Hudson Valley, where it's snowing again. It wasn't supposed to snow today, but for some reason I'm driving through a blizzard. Thanks, weatherman. But I'm not on the highway, so I'm safe. And I'm not in Pennsylvania, so I'm double safe. But yeah, so I hope all the kids are safe. I hope they all enjoyed their walkout. I was thinking the other thing we could do is maybe fool them into having a protest jog. I noticed there's some unhealthy high schoolers in my town. Probably in your town, too. If we could all convince them all to go on a 2 miles? 3 miles? A little jog? That might be good. We could come up with a different thing for them to protest every couple days and send them on a 2-mile protest jog. And then they would maybe get in shape at the same time that they could flex their civic muscles. I don't know. Hey, listen, I hope you all have a fantastic day today. I really appreciate you tuning into the podcast. If you enjoyed it, tell a friend. Retweet it. If you hated it, tell all your friends about the terrible, terrible man saying terrible things. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Have a great day. We will talk to you tomorrow.